Okay, so last class we finished chapter 80 of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that means we have to have a change of subject. I thought, why not go to the next chapter, which is entitled Krishna and Balaram Meet the Inhabitants of Vrindavan, which is one of the chapters of the Bhagavatam that Lord Sri Chaitanya was listening to and meditating on in his Anchalila. The Anchalila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's fulfilling his internal purpose, which is to become a devotee. The Leela of Lord Chaitanya is God is the object of love. His devotees are the subject of love. The devotees are the lovers. God is the beloved. And he realizes that to love is greater pleasure than to be loved. So God wanting to be, Krishna wanting to be complete in his pleasure, he wants to become a devotee. And he wants to become his best devotee. And he wants to become his best devotee at the height of the devotee's love, which is the mood of separation. So eternally, Krishna manifests as Sri Chaitanya. And to actually become a devotee, and what does it mean to become a devotee? It means a certain heart, not a certain form. To become a devotee is a certain heart. It's not a certain form. So, I've explained this many times. To become a devotee, you have to get that love from someone who is a devotee. So Chaitanya meets his guru and his siksha gurus. And then when you get that love, it's in a seed form and it has to be grown. And the process of watering that seed is chanting and hearing. Of course, it's focused on the holy name, but the meditation on the holy name is intensified according to our sambandha or relationship with the holy name. So Lord Chaitanya is spending the last days of his life chanting the holy name and cultivating his love for who is to be named, and therefore the name, because in the absolute reality there's no difference between the vachaka and vachya. The name, the sound, the expression, and that which is being expressed, which is the form. So he's chanting the name, but cultivating that sambandha or cultivating that relationship by hearing the Bhagavatam. But because he wants a specific relationship and a specific mood, and that is the mood of Radha, he reads and meditates on those stories mostly, which express Radha's highest love and separation. In a mood of hankering and appreciation to experience that. And as we know, poetics, poetic descriptions, dramatic descriptions, when expressed properly, give one the same mood that they are depicting. So the Bhagavatam is depicting the ultimate reality, which is the love of Godhead, and which means a relationship with God, Krishna. And therefore, one who hears the Bhagavatam, he also gets that mood of a particular relationship with Krishna called rasa. So those of you who have come a little late, I was uncharacteristically here exactly at 9 o'clock. And I began by explaining that we had finished the story of Sudama Brahman, and I just, you know, looked at the next page, and it's Krishna and Balaram meet the residents of Vrindavan, which is the story in the Bhagavatam which describes Radha's highest love. When the residents of Vrindavan on a solar eclipse go to a holy place, Kurukshetra, it's just like a codicy. A codicy is technically, in a material sense, inauspicious, because the sins are in the grains and the body becomes corrupted, but it's actually auspicious, because to do that, you increase your chanting and hearing. And therefore, Ekadasi is Madhava Titi Bhakti Janani, the days of Lord Hari, give birth to devotion. So the solar or lunar eclipse is auspicious on one standpoint. But on the other standpoint, it's very auspicious, because in India, everyone is just purifying themselves. I remember once, lunar eclipse or solar eclipse, I was in Vrindavan, and I just went to the Jamuna, and there was like thousands of Brijbasis just sitting in the Jamuna during the eclipse, chanting. Just as when Lord Chaitanya was born, he was born on the lunar eclipse. Everyone was in the Ganga, chanting the holy names. So anyway, I thought we'd go on to this next story, and just maybe say a few words about the wonderful story of Sudama Brahmana. You know, I love the point how much Krishna appreciated what he gave, even though it was little, because it was expressed in love. And therefore Krishna reciprocated. And I think it's a point, actually, how one should, you know, one has a deity, one should worship them as nice as possible. One should worship as nice as possible. It's the foundation of prosperity. And of course, Sudama the Brahmin, I also love the point that when he returns, he doesn't yet understand that Krishna's gift. He came home empty-handed, but he wasn't dissatisfied, because a devotee's standard of success is not material. It's consciousness. And the ultimate consciousness is the darshan of God. If you look at the ultimate reality, prosperity is so much secondary to consciousness. That's why when Prabhupada, it's interesting, when I first read the Krishna book, you get this image of just a simple village. I always got the image of a simple village. But then when I read deeper, I read about the prosperity of Vrindavan. I understood, because Prabhupada's vision was love. So he was describing the love, and the opulence became a kind of receded to the background. And that's specifically why we worship Krishna. He's not Naishvarya. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that means personality. His love is manifest so powerfully that it overshadows his opulence. Just like if you had an intimate relationship with a very big person, your friendship with them, which is equality, your intimate love with them, your parental, whatever your relationship, would so far overshadow their opulence. So the highest standards is love. And love is consciousness. That's what consciousness is. Or let's say consciousness is the faculty to experience love. And even then, that love is there within us. Just like when water turns to ice. When water turns to ice, the liquidity, it is there, but it's not manifest because it's been transformed. Our love is there, but somehow or other, certain conditions has transformed what's very, very natural, but it's still there. So the standard, and Krishna's appreciation of Sudama is because of his consciousness. And then finally, Sudama gets all the wealth and accepts it because it was given by God out of love. One reason why Krishna gave him the opulence, because Sudama was so pure, but he still had a tinge of attachment, and that was to renunciation. And bhakti is gyane pyasam, when you become free from that attachment. You still have an attachment. And in the Bhagavatam, there's always stories of Brahmins whose religiosity becomes an impediment to their spirituality when the and it becomes appropriated by the ego. And therefore, it's not actually real religiosity, because real religiosity is the consciousness, not anything external. external to the consciousness, even religiosity, even rituals, even renunciation. Jnana karma jnabhitam. What is bhakti? Anukulyena anyabhilashita shunyam. Jnana karma jnana. It's not covered by jnana. It's not covered by karma. So it's such a wives of the Brahmins. They're performing rituals, but they're for a material objective. And when you have material objective, then you appropriate things for the ego. Whether the rituals make you better than someone else, or your renunciation makes you better than someone else. But Prahlad Maharaj says, if you're a Brahmin, but you're not humble, you're not a devotee, and even if you have all the brahminical ornaments, tolerance, peacefulness, self-control, religiosity, knowledge, you know, so many things, you can't save yourself. This is such an important point. What in the name of religion can be appropriated to the ego? Even bhakti, in Madhurya Kadambini it says, even bhakti. One of the impediments of bhakti is bhakti itself. If you start to think, I am better devotee, and when Sadhu said, told someone, you're not better than everyone or anyone. You can appropriate it to the ego. So Sudama, Krishna's mercy, he had to take, he was proud of being renowned, so Krishna said, okay, now, as an austerity, take opulence. Because for someone who has gyan, then the hate of material things pervades the consciousness. Where a devotee is neutral. The Yoga Sutras, one of the niyams, moral observances, is austerity. It's also one of the practices of Kriya Yoga, which is essential to weaken the psychological underpinnings of the mind that engross us in ignorance. But it says not harsh, because it could disturb the mind, and that's against yoga. Not harsh. But in any practice of spiritual life, one has to practice some natural discomfort. Anyway, we'll start today's story. Sri Shuka Uvacha Atai Kada Dravatyam Vasato Ramakrishnayo Suyo Paragashumahan Astit Kalpakshaye Yata. Shukadeva Goswami said, once while Balarama and Krishna were living in Dwaraka, there occurred a great eclipse of the sun, just as if the end of Lord Brahma's day had come. Purport. As Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, the words ata and ekada are commonly used in Sanskrit literature to introduce a new topic. Here they especially indicate that the reunion of the Yadus and Vrishnis at Kurukshetra is being narrated out of chronological sequence because the Rajasuya Yajna has been described before this. So, this is out of sequence, but, and it's explained in the commentaries. But the Bhagavatam doesn't have to be chronological. It's basically chronological and describes Krishna's pastimes, but Sukadeva Goswami, it's not, you know, when you present things, you not only present them chronologically, but you present them in accordance with people's realizations too. The Bhagavatam's for us. So it's just placed at the right time. In your progressive understanding of Krishna, it's just placed at the right time. Tam gyatvam manujarajam puristareva sarvata saman panchakam kshetram yayu shreyo viditsaya. Knowing of this eclipse in advance, O King, many people went to the holy place known as Samanta Panchika in order to earn pious credit. Purport. Vedic astronomers of 5,000 years ago could predict eclipses of the sun and the moon just as well as our modern astronomers can. The knowledge of the ancient astronomers went much further, however, since they understood the karmic influences of such events. Yeah, it's so amazing that, you know, a lot of times, you know, modern intellectuals, they make fun of astrology. While astrology can be scientifically proven in a controlled experiment to show an accuracy in the prediction of the future, because obviously, the astrological predictions are based on birth of what will happen. So, I mean, I've done these psychology of karma classes, and it's scientific. It's controlled. Here's a person's birth information. You don't know the person, but based on that information, you can say things about the person. And even what happened in their life. I thought it's just amazing how the cheating propensity is there when you have certain objectives a priori, like atheism, then you can form your experiments within the realm of certain conclusions. That can conform to your conclusions, and you neglect other facts that don't, and that's not scientific. So they can tell the karmic influences of these events. Solar and lunar eclipses are generally very inauspicious, with certain rare exceptions. I told you many times, at least those people that are listening, that when you're in India and when there's a solar and lunar eclipse, man, the whole place shuts down. Even the temples There's no worship of the deities during the solar lunar eclipse. There's no cooking during the solar lunar eclipse. And after it, everyone has to take bath, and any clothes that are out within that eclipse are washed. Like you're hiding in your room, cowering with the curtains shut. No sun, none of the rays get in. But it, as the otherwise inauspicious Ekadasi day becomes beneficial when used for the glorification of the Lord already, so the time of an eclipse is also advantageous for fasting and worshiping. The holy pilgrimage site known as Samanta Panchaka is located at Kurukshetra, the sacred ground of the Kurus, where the Kuru kings' predecessors performed many Vedic sacrifices. The Kurus were thus advised by the learned Brahmins that this would be the best place for them to observe vows during the eclipse. Long before their time, Lord Parashuram had done penance at Kurukshetra to atone for his killings. Samanta Panchaka, the five ponds he dug there, were still present at the end of Dwapara Yuga as they are even today. What is the name of that lake? Oh my God, how can I forget it? Rama Sarovara. I went to Kurukshetra, and it is what a beauty. I think it's 2 miles by 3 miles, and they, you know, beautiful sandstone steps. And to the ladies, they have a whole huge area where there's a sandstone pavilion over the steps, which is open to the water, so the ladies can bathe in privacy. And the water was crystal clear. And we went to Jyotishar, where Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. It's just like an empty field, beautiful trees, and, you know. India is such a place where the whole Mahabharata and Krishna's pastimes are outlined. There's so many udipans, remembrances. Nikshatyam him kurvan rama shastra britambara nipanam rudarongena yatra chakre maharadan injecha bhagavan namo. After ridding the earth of kings, Lord Parashuram, the foremost of warriors, created huge lakes from the king's blood at Samanta Panchaka. Although he is never tainted by karmic reactions, Lord Parashuram performed sacrifices there to instruct people in general. Thus he acted like an ordinary person trying to free himself of sin. So basically, we are responsible for the selfish actions we do, which are actions and attitudes which are against the nature of the self. The perfected state of living entity is called a devotee. Sin is to not act as a devotee, to exploit others. And there are reactions to it. So when you transgress religious principles, dharma, appropriate activities, then an intelligent person takes it seriously. When we offend another Vaishnava, we have to regret. I think there's 5 levels of atonement. There's regret. Then you can apologize if that's the type of thing. 4, then you can atone, and then you can suffer the reaction. So rather than suffer the reaction, and one tries to either atone and at least regret. Sometimes there's nothing you can do, but at least perform the atonement of regret. That's always there within us. Sometimes we just have to purify ourselves by regretting and embracing the fact that we have acted against God. And we have acted against ourselves. We've acted against others. From all poor parts of Bharat Varsha, great number of people now came to that Samanta Panchak on pilgrimage, or descended of Bharata. Among those arriving at the holy place were many Vrishnis, such as Gada, Pradyumna, and Sambha, hoping to be relieved of their sins. Akura, Vasudev, and Ahuka, and other kings went there. Aniruddha remained in Dwarka with Suchandra, Sukha, and Sharana to guard the city, together with Kritavarma, the commander there. So basically, if you know the story, Radha and the residents of Vrindavan hadn't seen Krishna for 96 years. So you can imagine the intensity of that reunion and the level of love it invoked. The mighty Yadavas passed with great majesty along the road. They were attended by their soldiers who rode on chariots, rivaling the airplanes of heaven, on horses moving with a rhythmic gait, and on bellowing elephants as huge as clouds. So piety and prosperity go together. Prabhupada said, because he saw that India used to have, certain places in India used to have such lush orchards and gardens, and then he just saw factories, and they were growing rubber trees. So Prabhupada quoted from Bhagavad Gita, he said, Anad Bhavanti Bhutani Parjanyad Anasambhava. All living beings subsist on food grains. He said, not Goodyear Bhavanti Bhutani. Not people subsist on that. So here in the Bhagavatam, it's expressing and demonstrating the facility that comes when people want to worship God purely. And the facility represents their love because there's a strong desire to worship God. And then with that desire to worship God come all the accoutrements. It's mentioned that in the Brahma Samhita, there's one verse, I forgot where, that according to one's desire, then all the things manifest for the service, including the beauty to make Krishna's environment beautiful. Even there's a liberation that one becomes an associate with Krishna just to be part of his entourage. Also with them were many infantrymen, as effulgent as celestial vidyadharas. The Yadavas were so divinely dressed, being adorned with gold necklaces and flower garlands, and wearing fine armor, that as they proceeded along the road with their wives, they seemed to be demigods flying through the sky. At Samanta Panchaka, the saintly Yadavas bathed and then observed the fast with careful attention. Afterwards, they presented brahmanas with cows bedecked with garments, flower garlands, and gold necklaces. So this is the this is the culture, the environment, the things that you do are so connected with elevating the consciousness. With careful attention, su samahita, very carefully, strictly, they observe the fact. When you come to a holy place, you can roll on the ground, you can fast, you can bathe in the holy river. To reorient your consciousness. Because really, a holy place means that the energy is moving in the service of the center. And our senses, the consciousness is flowing out towards the sense object and contacting the sense objects to announce that we're the center. So any classical yoga has to reverse the flow of the consciousness flowing to the sense objects for exploitation to the consciousness flowing to the sense objects for service. So it's a reorientation of the consciousness when you come to the holy Dham. It's a reorientation of the consciousness when you come to the holy Dham. So one way you do it is by fasting. Another way you do it is by giving charity, by bathing. All entail moving from the egotistical platform. Otherwise you can't enter the Dham. That's why when you go to the Dham, you also worship Lord Shiva. He protects the Dham. But what does he protect the Dham from? The intrusion of ego. Because the Dham is unified. It's a community. Community means you leave your ego at the door. And how do you leave your ego at the door? Your intention becomes the service of what you're part of. And that creates the world and community of love. When we enter the Dham, we have to reorient our consciousness. Rama radeshu vidhivat puna aputya vishnaya dasvanan vijagrebhyo krishneno bhaktir astati. In accordance with scriptural injunctions, descendants of Vrishni then bathed once more in Lord Parashuram's lake and fed first-class brahmanas with sumptuous food. All the while they prayed, may we be granted devotion to Lord Krishna. The second bath marked the end of their fasting on the following day. So sometimes it's several days of entrance. A crow rolled in the dust. Such a humble expression. The dust, you know, in but Raghava Pandit was worshiping his theory. He was so fine that one day from, you know, 10 kilometers away, they bought the best coconuts. And when the servant put the coconuts, carrying them on his head into the kitchen, or into the altar, the coconut touched the top of the door, and he thought that the dust of the floor may have touched that and contaminated it, the dust of the floor where everybody puts their feet. So the dust, when you go to the Dom, you worship that dust. In fact, prema you get in Vrindavan by that dust. Then, with the permission of Lord Krishna, their sole object of worship, the Vrishnis ate breakfast and sat down at their leisure beneath trees that gave cooling shade. So they took permission. Permission is a very interesting thing. In that type of consciousness, you're no longer ruled by the ego, which represents your selfish desires. You're ruled by the desire of God and those who represent God. So even, you know, when even your own needs in that kind of, may not be an everyday life, but when you're going to pilgrimage and you're under guidance and purification, you do things out of permission. Because you're not no longer ruled by selfishness. You want things sanctioned from above. The Yadavas saw that many of the kings who had arrived were old friends and relatives. The Matsyas, Uthinaras, Kaushalyas, Vidarbhas, Kurus, Shinjayas, Kambojas, Kaikeyas, Madras, Kuntis, and the king of Anartha and Kerala. They also saw many hundreds of other kings, both allies and adversaries. In addition, my dear King Prikshit, they saw their dear friends Nanda Maharaj and the coward men and women who had been suffering in anxiety for so long. So how wonderful. I was even thinking, you know, when I was meditating on rolling on the dust, Vrindavan, I was meditating, coming back to Vrindavan and seeing my spiritual family and so many people that I know. So this is after so many years. That's after 6 months. This is after so many years. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. And then the residents of Dwarka see the residents of Vrindavan, who utantita chiram, chiram charat kurunaya vatir, so long time they're in anxiety, hankering for such a long time in separation from Krishna, just like a Kura going to Vrindavan. In that mood, now I will see the Lord of my life. Again, consciousness. So even the anxiety, we look at in terms of consciousness. And what's the consciousness? It's intense love. As the great joy of seeing one another made the lotuses of their hearts and the faces bloom with fresh beauty, the men embraced each other enthusiastically, with tears pouring from their eyes, the hairs on their bodies standing on end, and their voices choked up. They experienced intense bliss. You know, all the devotees seeing each other again. And the happiness that that created within them. The women glanced at one another with pure smiles of loving friendship. And when they embraced, their breasts smeared with saffron paste, pressed against one another, as their eyes filled with tears of affection. Spiritual world. Emotional exchange of relationships. The spiritual world. Emotional exchange. A deep emotional exchange of relationships. This is our aspiration, to enter that world. And at least try to make a facsimile of that world here in the relationships of devotees with one another. They all then offered obeisances to their elders and received respect in return from their younger relatives. After inquiring from one another about the comfort of their trip and their well-being, they proceeded to talk about Krishna. So that verse will do. Would anyone like to ask any questions? Would anyone like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All praise to Srila Prabhupada.
Nandadula, Hare Krishna.
I have two questions, you know, if you have time, in other ways.
I have time, yes.
Okay, first thing is not for this class, but one class before last Sunday. You mentioned that the devotee, particularly you mentioned that, you know, even the family and the others, they trust. Because they know that, you know, he's following some path where, you know, duplicity is not followed.
Wait, you have to speak slowly. I'm not hearing. Good.
Okay. The devotees, those who are practicing devotional service, people, the trust, because
They trust. Yes. Trust. T-R-U-S-T.
They trust.
Yeah. And in that respect, and I will tell you a true story, which, you know, Niranjan Maharaj told about his own
family. Can I ask you something? Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not. You know, maybe, you know, I'll disconnect.
Okay. Now you can hear me?
Yeah, better.
Yeah, I was in a weird connection. Niranjan Maharaj told about his family. It is really, you know, amazing. You know, his father didn't give him anything. His mother, when she passed away, she made a will and put 5 cents for him. That's $1. Because in America, you cannot disinherit any family member unless there is a cause. So she was very, very intelligent lady. She was, I think she was graduate from a very prestigious institution, what she told. Then, you know, so when the will was opened, he was called in because his brother and sister, they requested him to be present.
Who is this?
This is Niranjan Maharaj.
When his mother died, he said?
Yeah, his mother died long ago, and he was visiting us, and he told the story.
His mother didn't die long ago. His mother died this year.
No, that's not his mother.
His mother died this year.
So what he told that, you know, when they opened the will, and that, you know, he was given only $1.
Who is given $1?
Yeah, in the in inheritance, you know, because...
Who is given?
Yeah, he was given, you know, $1 in the will.
Who is given?
For the, his mother. For all children.
Okay.
They have to give, but, you
okay.
know, only for
no,
children,
okay.
mother's one.
Wait. This is when Narayan Swami's father died.
Yeah, yeah, this could be, no, he was that, I might
it
be,
has
no.
to be his father if they left the money to the mother.
Yeah, but but what I'm telling you, this not this reason. When there was some problem in the family, they called Niranjan Maharaj to mediate so that, you know, all the brothers and sisters, they call him that you can come because they have trust in him.
Okay.
That's the reason last right. time. Okay, but the question that I had,
what was the question?
Question was that, you know, even family members, they trust when somebody is following a strict, rigid, you know, path.
Right. Prabhupada said that a father may be a drunk, but he doesn't want his son to be a drunk.
That could be. The second question, Maharaj, then I felt, you know, you mentioned that bhakti itself is, you know, hindrance to bhakti. I couldn't understand.
It means one of the things that will impede bhakti is that one becomes advanced in spiritual life, it will attract followers. And therefore, a person can be enamored. So in that sense, the having of bhakti, you have to be very careful when you advance in devotional service. Then you will become, you can become prominent in a spiritual society. And therefore, you can get enamored with followers. So in that sense, bhakti can be an impediment. It's indirect.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj. And I was a little bit shocked.
Well, I'm glad you asked questions, you know. Thank you. Anybody else like to ask a question or say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Malone.
Malone, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Great. We'll see you soon.
Thank
right?
you.
Just
yes,
let us
absolutely.
Know how you're getting up there and if anything we can do. Okay.
Hey,
thank you
so much.
Okay,
Hare Krishna,
great.
Maharaj.
Who's that? Vegavati,
Hare Krishna.
Oh, Vegavati, so nice to hear from you.
Yeah, now that I'm remembering.
Are you calling from Florida?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Well, okay. Was this the week of Gitanagari Rath Yatra?
No, I missed it. I'm actually going to be up there next week, but I'm going to miss both the major festivals.
Okay. Well, sometimes that's nice, you know. You just be with the cows. And good. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Nice to hear from you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bhav Mara, Shastra Das.
Shastra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Good. Okay, the Puri thing's going on. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end today. Thank you all.